This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July 25, 2008. Commodity Week is a production of WILL, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the Land-Grant College in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Has corn found an interim low this week? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group in Chicago, Illinois. Our panelists today are Kurt Kimball of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. This week, December corn traded to a new low for the move at 562 and three quarters. But the end of the week saw an uptick, some say on short covering. Has this month's liquidation selling been exhausted, Kurt Kimmel?
Well, I hope so. It's no fun to watch the market go down after the big rally we saw. But time-wise, corn were due for an 8 to 10-week cycle low and through here, so we're fairly close to that. Major retracement levels that got within 5 to 12 cents of what some analysts was looking for. Then, too, we did find some export business pick up this week, so maybe we're at fair value here for a while.
We hear that the trade is already focusing on the 2009 growing season. Early estimates are that 94 million acres of corn will be needed to meet demand. The July 09, December 09 spread is running at an inverse at the moment. Do you look for it to move to a carry market, perhaps as much as 20 cents? And if so, why, Matt Bennett?
Well, I think that's a very real possibility. I think that the purchasing of corn acres is going to be very much necessary. Everybody knows that we've got input prices through the roof. You know, you hear a little bit about some of the farmer meetings that people are having right now, and there's a lot of concern about being able to put the crop out with the huge input prices and then not being able to lock in maybe your pricing, you know, because there hasn't really been a whole lot of purchasing of 09 corn. So I think that, it probably will go to a carry because I think we're going to have to buy corn acres at some point.
While soybeans appear to still have bullish prospects, it's been a tough July. Technically, beans have found support this week at its 100-day moving average, and there are growing concerns about hot and dry conditions in the Delta. If Midwest conditions remain favorable, what price level might we be looking at in a month, Wyatt Muse?
Well, one thing we have to look at is the continued inverse in the old crop cash price over the new crop. We continue to see good basis levels paid by the processors to try to keep it pulled out of the producers and commercials. So 30 days from now is going to have largely impacted by what condition the beans are in. Beans seem to be considerably behind where we were, and 30 days from now we're coming up to the 1st of September, and that's not going to leave us a whole lot of time before our frost dates could be approaching.
September corn had a high on the week of 609 and a quarter. A low of 543 and three quarters. September corn ending the week at 577 and a quarter, down 32 and a quarter from last week. December corn, 596 and a half, down 32 from a week ago. On August 12th, USDA will give us her first field survey of the season and adjust planted and harvested acres, taking into account spring flooding. USDA will also try to project a yield, but will not factor in that planting was delayed. What degree of importance do you place on this report, and what do you anticipate, Matt?
I can't help but think that we're going to have less corn acres than what we had before, and I can't help but think that maybe our yield that we're looking at right now is a little bit inflated. And the reason why I say that is I think there's a lot of holes out there in a lot of places. I've seen from the air a lot of holes in fields. I think from the roadside, it looks fantastic. You know, it's almost been a greenhouse in a lot of places. We've had heat, we've had moisture, and this corn's really come along. But that's from the roadside. I think we're going to have to keep in mind that, you know, that this was a very stressful spring, and I think it's going to come out in the yield at some point. I don't know if it's going to be in August, but it will come out at some point.
The trade, once of the opinion that the corn crop would be under 150 bushels to the acre, is now trading a number around 152 to 153 BPA. At 152, carryout next year could be about 1.1 billion bushels, an 8.8% carryout-to-use ratio. Do you anticipate that future spreads will need to move to full carry between now and harvest, Wyatt?
Future spreads are likely to continue to widen. You're starting to see that on the cash corn side of things, indicating that producers need to use their bins in the upcoming year. You're starting to see a lot of elevators widen their fall basis. And yeah, I think futures continue to work wider. We're already seeing historically wide spreads on the DS-8 out to the July 9. Trading over 40 cents today, and I think it's a good opportunity for people to take advantage of that if they are going to use their bins. Roll your hedges out to the July 9, and if there is crop problems or we come up shorter than we think, it's likely those spreads are going to narrow in.
There is a growing debate about what corn bases will do this fall and winter, so let's get each of your ideas, and we'll start with Kurt.
Well, we feel bases is going to improve going into this fall. End users not covered. We're going to see hedge pressure come into the market here this fall as elevators buy grain. Also, too, if this commodity funds continue to liquidate here going into fall, it's going to keep some pressure on top of it. But we think all those factors are going to kick in here as we go into September. We'll see a normal seasonal appreciation basis to the 1st of December.
Matt?
I would agree with Kurt. I do think the basis is going to continue to improve. And whenever we look at going into the harvest, we do have a fair amount of corn, but we're going to be looking regionally. Places are going to really be looking for corn. So I think in certain regions, basis could get pretty hot.
And Wyatt.
These guys both have good points, and I think the regional play is probably more important than ever. There's going to be areas of the country that are corn deficient, and there's going to be areas of the country looking for a place to put it. It's going to be tough to get a grasp on how much on-farm storage has been built in any given area. Add that onto the elevator storage and then throw a wild card of yield out there. And I could see us weakening in the fall basis going into fall and strengthening as fall progresses all the way into the January time frame.
August soybeans had a high for the week of 14.54 and three quarters, a low of 13.58. August soybeans finishing the week at 13.98 and three quarters, down 71 and a quarter from last week. November, 13.86 and a half, down 61 and a half from a week ago. The critical August soybean growing season is still ahead, and we're beginning to hear talk of longer range forecasts of a return to hot and dry conditions. And of course, those stories we already mentioned about current dry conditions in the Delta. Next week, what wins the taffy poll? Bearish outside markets and near-term favorable weather, or the perception of adverse weather on the horizon? Kurt.
Well, beans been historically a weather-following market. As far as the outside markets, if they don't completely get destroyed or fall a bit, I feel probably weather's going to take over the bean market here over the next 30 days because traders love to push that bean market around watching skilling at 12 noon.
If the weather verifies, then will we be back up knocking on the door of contract highs prior to the harvest, Matt?
Well, anything is possible. You know, coming into this growing season, all we heard about is it's going to be an extremely volatile summer. Obviously, we've had volatility. You look at what we've done in the last 3 weeks, and we've really hit the bean market hard. But, you know, whenever you look at a lot of guys are talking about, you drive around, you don't see a whole lot of really good bean fields. Hey, if you throw on some dry weather on the kind of stress we had this spring, anything's possible.
Wyatt, your thoughts on bean basis for fall and winter?
I think basis remains firm in the spot market, remains wide in the deferreds. There's a lot of hedge risk out there on elevators, and a lot of people aren't wanting to bid more than 30 to 60 days out. We're seeing a lot of basis firmness nearby at the processors, people that are wanting to pull it out, and with the $2 break in the futures, the elevator margins are eased a little bit, and the farmer's not as eager to sell $2 below where it was a month ago. So use HTAs and get your hedges locked in at the higher end of things, but don't be in a big hurry to set deferred soybean basis, especially considering we're fairly tight on supplies today, actually extremely tight on supplies, and like these guys mentioned, any weather problems over the next 30 days, and we're looking at a whole nother issue going into next year.
September wheat had a high on the week of 822 and three quarters, a low of 775. September wheat ending the week at 811, up 7 from last week. July, 882 and a quarter, up 2.5 from a week ago. The upside for wheat futures appear at this point where they are supported by the fundamentals, but some say that there is still potential downside risk. To what degree do you feel over the next few months that wheat's price action is tied to corn, which could allow for additional wheat gains beyond wheat's own fundamental story, Matt?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think that if corn has the strength that I feel like it could have, I think wheat is definitely going to be just going right on up with it. I do think that wheat probably doesn't have a whole lot of downside at this time. It's kind of tied to corn and beans more so than what you sometimes would think. I just feel like we're going into a critical time period. If we have any weather stress whatsoever and corn and beans go up, I'd be shocked if wheat didn't.
Live cattle, the August variety, had a high on the week of 98.65, a low of 97.05. August live cattle finishing the week 97.82.5, up 32.5 from last week. August feeders at 111.75, down 212.5 from a week ago. August lean hogs, the high there 79.75, the low 76.45. August lean hogs finishing the week at 78.60, up 170 from last week. We had a cattle on feed report on Friday. On feed, 96%. Placed in June, 91%. Marketed in June, 92%. But perhaps the most telling number was the semi-annual cattle inventory at 100%. Do you feel USDA will raise livestock demand on the August report as it did in July? And why or why not, Kurt?
Well, as far as livestock demand goes, we'll have to watch consumer confidence here in the U.S., but probably the main feature in livestock demand is the U.S. dollar. If it stays weak and we continue to see this Asian and worldwide demand continue to buy U.S. beef and pork, that'll be the key.
Matt?
Well, I pretty well agree with Kurt. I think whenever you look at the margins, obviously things have eased up considerably, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of placements we have from here on out.
Turning to the speculation side of the market, what is your best bet at the moment for any commodity? And I'll stay with you, Matt.
Best bet for any commodity, I would probably be buying some cheap calls maybe on corn or beans. But if I had to pick one of the two, I usually like to roll with corn. So I'm gonna buy some cheap calls on corn.
Kurt?
We like buying April fats here on this break. We feel April fats of 09's got quite a bit of upside potential as we go through into next year. As far as the corn and beans go, just getting there both ways, long and short. As soon as you get a profit, take it because it'll go the other way.
Why?
I'm with Kurt on the volatility play, but as far as getting long on a speculative move, soybeans seem to have the most upside in my mind just based on how tight we are already and the condition of the crop that's out there.
At the moment, Kurt, what is your most significant concern about this market?
Our concern is the commodity fund position. There's still a large long in corn and beans both, and they tend to be trend following systems. And if they get sell signals and decide to get out, you can have probably one of the most bullish things in the grain market. You think it would go higher, but if they want out, they're going to get out, and they can drive it sharply lower if they want.
And they sure did that in the month of July. I believe they liquidated over 100,000 contracts of corn, and there was some talk, Matt, about the potential of them liquidating another 50, 75,000.
I certainly think that's possible. And, whenever you looked at the weakness that we had in the outside markets, it was kind of a domino effect. The pendulum swung. I had a guy ask me, when do you think the market's going to turn around, a couple days ago? And I said, well, it did a couple weeks ago. So, I don't know where the bottom is on this thing. I think my guess is as good as anybody's. But I do think that weakness in crude and dollar rallying here and there definitely would lend credence to the fact that we can go down a little bit more.
Wyatt, your biggest market concern?
I'm going to have to side with the CFTC. And on this, just this week, we saw that it looks like they're going to be charging a fund with some speculation manipulation in the oil markets. And as we see this happening, that really just opens the door to the ag markets. And that's one of my biggest fears, is seeing some of the pressure, not necessarily that they're going to win or that's going to be executed, but more so that the fear of that pulls that money out to a seemingly safer haven.
Remember, you can receive a podcast of Commodity Week, as well as all our daily agricultural shows. Go to www.willag.org and click on the podcast link in the right navigation window. That's willag.org. I'll be back in about 2 minutes with our guest this week, Roy Huckabee of the Lind Group in Chicago, Illinois.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a warm and very humid start to this past week, cooler and drier air filtered into Illinois for a couple of days. Rain began its return to Illinois on Thursday as warmer air to the south began a push back north. Temperatures this week range from 1 degree above normal in southern Illinois to 2 to 3 degrees below normal in northern Illinois, with the greatest departures around Lake Michigan. Even though high temperatures remained in the 80s early in the week, dew points in the 70s made for some very muggy conditions until the front pushed south on Tuesday. Rainfall this week was rather variable, ranging from normal to above normal in the northern half of Illinois to as little as 25% of normal in southeastern Illinois. Significant rain did finally arrive in southeastern Illinois on Thursday as a complex of showers and thunderstorms moved southeast out of Iowa. Fortunately, most of the rain in Illinois has not been excessively heavy and has been beneficial to the corn and soybeans. A frontal boundary lurking in the Midwest this weekend and throughout next week will bring periodic chances for showers and thunderstorms, with the best chances for dry weather during the middle of the week. Some heavy rain could occur along the front in northern Illinois on Sunday as a trough of low pressure aloft moves through the state. Temperatures next week should be near normal, but we will likely see an increase in dew points, and that could make things uncomfortable at times. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Wyatt Muse of the Andersons, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. Joining us today by phone is Roy Huckabee of the Lind Group in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for being with us today, Roy.
Hi, it's a pleasure, gentlemen.
This past week, the EPA said it was delaying its decision till August on whether to allow Texas to opt out of the National Renewable Fuel Standard. Some say the delay is to allow the EPA to take into account the August crop production report. Nonetheless, if Texas gets its way, what does it mean for corn futures?
I think that there is enough uncertainty about our ability to meet the ethanol mandate. And I'm even hearing people trading PIN numbers on old blending trades just so they can say that they've done more than they're going to do in the next 12 months.
Questions for Roy. Wyatt.
Roy, what are you seeing out of the locals in Chicago in reaction to this? Are they going with the move, or are some people in a situation where they're trying to outguess the funds, which seem to be largely traded electronically?
Well, I think that without exception, there's a concern in the trade that the markets are extremely thin. And where you used to be able to walk into the pit and trade 1,000 corn, now you have a difficult time trading 100 corn on the platform. And we have developed a little device called an iceberg. If you've not heard about that, that's a machine that allows you to put in 200 corn to sell, and you sell it five at a time so that nobody sees the size of your orders, and that way they don't run from a big order.
Matt Bennett?
Roy, whenever you look at this corn market, we talked a little bit about this. What do you think we're going to have for the August report as far as acreage goes, and what kind of a yield are you looking at, all things considered, factoring in the spring?
Well, I think the last time we talked, I had done a little study. If you take the wet acres, the acres that were flooded, and this is what's important about the corn report this year. In the 1st of June, we woke up and we had 8 inches of rain in major Iowa production areas. And on Monday morning, I, for one, looked around and says, I can't be short this. So you covered all your short hedges and let the market run. It ran $2. On July the 4th, I woke up again. It was a Friday. The markets were closed. I'm riding wires. And I look around and I said, my goodness, it's raining. It's going to rain for another 10 days. You can't be bullish when the market's got rain on it in July. So you sold the markets. If you missed pulling the trigger on either one of those 2 days, you got left behind. Market rallied $2, has now broken $2.30 off the highs. I'm not sure we're done yet, guys. I think that your comment earlier about consumers needing to buy inventory, I'm worried about the guy that bought calls, and my goodness, they were expensive, and to pay for it, he sold three puts. And as the board comes back down here, those short puts are going to turn into long corn positions. And so I see some people with problems in how they've handled the market. And because of that, we've seen a huge rundown in volatility. Corn volatility was trading in the low 50s, and tonight it closes at 38, 39.
Kirk Kimmel?
Hey, Roy, I'd like to go back to this ethanol. You know, we got mandates, and they say we have to have 94 million acres to meet this mandate and so forth. But yet we've seen these ethanol plants pull back, and we've seen even projections for ethanol go backwards. My question is, we've got these mandates and these goals, but what's going to force people to build plants and go to those, though?
I don't think that you're going to see quite as many plants built. We've already seen some of these operations pull back. There were two plants announced this week with the corn board down, one in Ohio and one in North Dakota, that are going to come up that weren't up. That'll add about 160 million gallons of ethanol production that wasn't running last week. My projections for corn consumption for ethanol next year is up 500 million bushels, 450 short of the USDA's projection. But quite honestly, it's because I've got a smaller crop size. I think our crop size is maxed out at 11.4, 11.5. And what I started to say was that the last time we talked, I just ran a little survey, and I took all of the flooded acres in southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Iowa, parts of Minnesota, and parts of Missouri. And I took those acres by crop reporting district down 15% on the yields, leaching, standing water, holes in the crop that when the combine runs through gives you a zero on the yield monitor. But because of the rains that developed in early July, I took the yields on the rest of the crop up 5%. I come up with a max yield doing that of 152. My problem is I don't know what the acres are. In parts of Illinois, parts of Iowa, even into Minnesota, we saw people plant corn right up until the first few days of July. We saw beans planted on July 15. So I'm worried that when the USDA does these surveys on acres, that they find a lot more acres. But it won't parlay into yields. It won't parlay into harvested acres. So we may have a major change between what's planted and what's harvested. In the floods in 1993, they came in July rather than June. But in 1993, we lost 6 million acres from the initial May reports to the final December reports. 6 million harvested acres. I think it was 4.5 million acres in corn and 1.5 million in beans. I'm very worried about that same thing happening this year.
Wyatt Muse.
I guess a comment first on the ethanol side. I think the mandates are going to be more of a psychological play in the market than an actual play. Because of ethanol's storability and the large amount of plants that have come on, you're seeing pretty wide spread between gasoline at the pump and ethanol at the plant. It's running $1.50 to $1.70. So what that means is your fueling station can go to an ethanol plant, purchase the raw ethanol, take it to their blender, throw a 5 or 10% blend in, and take it to the pump, and you've got $1.50 to $1.70 to play in your transportation. Mandates aside, I see the fuel people still using that ethanol in their regular blend. We're not going to necessarily see the E85 or the big pushes out there, but even without a mandate today, given our current economics, I see it staying in there. So shifting gears a little bit, another question for Roy. What do you see on the side of soybean basis, and how do you see our soybean exports playing into this in the face of some South American turmoil continuing?
Well, you're exactly right about the turmoil in South America continuing. When the Senate voted to not uphold the export tax increase that the Kirchners had put in place in Argentina, everybody thought that everything was going to go back to normal. Bean spreads relaxed, bean basis relaxed, bean futures relaxed. All of a sudden this week, they've indicated they're going to still hold the exporter up to a higher duty on exports that have taken place in the past, not in the future, in the past. And this place is up for grabs again. Basis levels in Argentine corn are up 60 cents this week as the trade has moved to Brazil to cover vessels that have been lined for months. And when middle of last week, when this vote was taken, there were 90 vessels waiting to load in Argentina. The current demurrage on a 55,000-ton vessel is $80,000 a day. You want to get in line behind 90 vessels and pay that much money? I don't think so. So basis levels in Brazil are up 60 cents on their beans, and they're up high enough. You're 75 bid, 85 offered for August, and U.S. beans offered out of the Gulf at 50 over. It makes us the cheapest beans in the world. So I think that your export numbers are going to stay strong. They've weakened a little bit over the last 3 weeks, but I think they're going to stay strong. Currently, we have about 80 million bushels of beans open to be shipped, and I think that that number will go up rather than down. There's another problem. The crop is late, 2 weeks late. USDA's carryout is 125 million. I estimate the month of September will use 150 to 160 million beans. 140 crush and 20 million exports. So you got to use all of your carryout to get to the first new crop beans, assuming they're 2 weeks late.
Roy, thanks for being with us today.
I'm glad to join the group.
Roy Huckabee of the Lind Group in Chicago, Illinois. We would like to thank our panel, Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.